This evening, we will hear a talk entitled, Demonstrating the Love That Makes Churches Grow. Our guest speaker, Mr. Richard Strain, CS of Boca Raton, Florida, is well qualified to speak on this subject. Some of us remember him as a first reader in New York City. Others remember him when he gave an address at an association in Tulsa. And all of us remember him through his many articles that have appeared in the periodicals. Please join me in warmly welcoming our guest, Mr. Richard Strain.
You can move this up.
I think I'll be fine. Good evening. It's nice to be with you. So, once I went to spend Christmas with my family in a small New England village. It was a typical Christmas. Yes, you can't hear it?
Well, let's get it up then. Can you hear it now? All right, how's that? All right. Now it's on. I can hear it too now. All right. This was a typical Christmas card type of village. Had a big white church with a big steeple at the top of the hill that was sort of dominating the scene. There was snow on the ground, and there were big elms hanging over the streets, and they were heavy with the snow that was lodged in them. And on Christmas Eve, we went to the midnight service at this community church. It was very barren inside. It was plain wooden pews, stark white walls. The only relief was furnished by two large, undecorated Christmas trees that were in the front of the church on the platform. As we went in, we were each given a candle. And at one point in the service, all the lights in the auditorium went out. And two ushers came down the center aisle with lighted candles. And they came to the first row and they lit the candle of each person sitting beside the aisle. That person took his candle then and lit the candle next to him. And that person took the candle and lit it to him next to him. And it went pew after pew all the way through the church. And by the time it got through, all the darkness had disappeared. And the whole auditorium was filled with this wonderful candlelight. And it was fascinating to see the darkness gradually just yield and disappear. I thought at the time, this is what Christian Science is doing. It's gradually removing darkness from thought and replacing it with light. And it's our job and privilege as individual Christian Scientists to let our light shine so that others receive the light. And in turn, they develop the light, and they pass it on to others, and then the others pass it on to others, and so on, until we finally get to Mrs. Eddy's prediction, where she says that Christendom will be called Christian Science. Now, that's our mission. Mrs. Eddy's mission was to found Christian Science, but our mission is to carry it on and see it develop. And as we get this understanding of the light, then it's going to shine forth to bless our communities and the whole world. But what is the light that we're being called on to let shine through us? Isn't it the light of love? The divine love that everyone unconsciously desires to find and be satisfied with and fulfilled by. Jesus said, "He that hath seen me hath seen the Father." As this love is revealed where each of us seems to be, this love becomes a law of attraction, the inspiration that lifts consciousness to discover the truth. You all know Jesus' statement, "And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me." And that's the way the law of love works. As we grow spiritually,
And let the consciousness of love be our only consciousness. It breaks down the materiality in those around us and enables them to discover that the Christ consciousness is right where they are, ready to lift them up and instruct them on the things of spirit. And that's how our churches and our movement grows. At that rate, isn't our need, our work to help spread the word, to grow in love, to understand love more clearly, and become the actual consciousness of love expressed without any taint of mortal mind in that consciousness? You cannot live permanently except as the consciousness of love, for that's all that makes up life. In the consciousness of love, there can't be hatred, resentment, anger expressed. Those false traits are the opposite to the qualities of love. If one entertains them, they tend to hide love's presence from him. If he fears or criticizes or condemns or backbites or gossips or hates, he's not showing forth the Father, but mortal mind. He's lost his light. Love, with its tenderness, gentleness, kindness, unselfishness, must constantly be expressed as his consciousness for him to reveal God's presence in place of mortal mind. Love is one being. It's everywhere. It knows no materiality, nothing except itself, no person. We need to lose the sense of person. Every time we see person, think a person, talk a person, we're hiding love's all presence from our consciousness. Ms. Eddy tells us plainly, there are no persons. This love demonstrated in this way, and demonstration means to reveal, then becomes the law of attraction to uplift others. But we need to stay alert to holding on to this presence of love and not let mortal mind take over and use us to express its opposite qualities. Mrs. Eddy lists 7 cardinal sins. They're hatred, envy, jealousy, anger, fear, malice, revenge. You can see very easily that there isn't any love connected with any of those. Bickel Young once said that, as far as he was concerned, anyone expressing any of those qualities was more in the depths of hell than someone who was being immoral. Now, and we all know how dangerous it is to our spiritual growth to be immoral. He said that any immoral person knew he was doing wrong and was willing usually to be healed. But a person expressing any of these 7 cardinal sins usually didn't feel they were really being bad, were therefore not always ready to let go of them, and therefore often difficult to heal. These people were often very self-righteous about others who were doing wrong, and that's a detriment to church growth. Only love revealed in place of mortal mind is going to result in church growth. Love is so busy loving, it doesn't have any time to be hating. Neither does its reflection. Mrs. Eddy urged her pupils to see the complete unreality of hatred, to see that it doesn't exist in the allness of love. She asked them to pray daily to be delivered from hating or being hated and its effects. She urged her pupils to love everything and everyone. One of her pupils once said that the way Mrs. Eddy said the word love made her see that she loved even the blades of grass that were under her feet. In her normal class of 1888, she said, "Can you love everything? Malice? Hatred? No. Then there is no malice and hatred. Surround all with love and see it as all, and there'll be nothing in your thought but love." That's a very important statement. Let me read it again. Surround all with love, and see it as all. And there'll be nothing in your thought but love. Then she gave that class some suppositions to test them. Can you love your enemies? Yes. Can you sit at your window and see a little child killed and feel love towards the perpetrator? Imagine, could you do that? Could you stay in the realm of love so solidly that you see love everywhere and maintain a loving consciousness, not letting mortal mind react in you to make you think you've seen a horrible act and getting you upset and indignant with the error? It takes a pretty clear sense of love to do that. That love would save us from reacting and being harmed by the reacting. And I think it would also heal the killer. Most of our bodily ills come from reacting and not clearing consciousness, but allowing the reactions to stay in thought and build up until mortal mind kicks them off onto the body in some problem. Once when I was young, I was talking to an old-time worker, and she had been a lecturer back in the 1920s. And she said she had gone to Wisconsin to a small town to give a lecture, and it was a winter day. And she said in those days, all that there was in these little towns were small wooden hotels. And she said there wasn't much soundproofing. And the room that she had adjourned a business meeting room. And she says there was a business meeting going on there, and there was an adjoining door, and she says smoke from the room was coming under the door, and she said, I'm supposed to be working on a new lecture, and here I've got this noise and this smoke to put up with. And she looked at a bowl of yellow roses that was on the desk in that room the lecture committee had sent her, and she thought, those roses don't know anything about that noise. They aren't aware of the smoke. They're only conscious of their own beauty and loveliness. Now she says, that's all I'm going to be conscious of. My wonderfulness as God's child. And she started working to see that there was nothing but God and man. Mazzetti says, to love infinite, ever-present love, all is love. And there is no error, no sin, sickness, nor death. And she also says, real consciousness is aware only of the things of God. Well, that's what my friend endeavored to be. Just aware of the things of God, to see love everywhere. And she says, suddenly this meeting that was supposed to have lasted all day ended. And somebody was thoughtful enough to open the windows before they left so the smoke went up. And she had the whole day then to herself to work on her next lecture. Then Mrs. Eddy threw a harder test at her class. She said, can you see your own daughter drugged morally or raped and still feel love? And then another. Can you bear ingratitude? This is the hardest. If you can, you've reached the love of our Master. These questions are worth thinking about. Test your understanding. Could you pass those tests? If not, you've got something to work about. One might think he knows something about love until you're up against a situation such as she pictures. Think up your own situations from time to time and see how well you can do in your thought. Then when you're up against an adverse situation, you've got the ammunition of love at hand to shoot down the aggressive error before it becomes something. What are the errors that get in the way of your accepting the consciousness of love? Don't put blinders on. Look at them and let them be removed. Mrs. Eddy said that Jesus looked right where the errors claimed to be and saw God there in place of them. We must keep going back to the basic concept of understanding love as all. And let that remove false concepts from our thought. Always, it's a lack of love expressed in one's thought that results in a lack of money in one's experience. A consciousness filled with love and actively expressing love is going to experience abundance. Mrs. Eddy writes in Science and Health, passions, selfishness, false appetites, hatred, fear, all sensuality yield to spirituality. And the superabundance of being is on the side of God, good. To experience the superabundance of being, we need to separate ourselves from the false traits I just read, and to see that only the opposite qualities of being are being expressed and lived in our thought and experience. Then we'll find that we're enjoying a consciousness of an abundance of inexhaustible love, and this in turn will result in an abundant life. But you've got to see that the only thing you're ever dealing with is love, not money. Mrs. Eddy once wrote a letter to a pupil, and she said, "Today I want to talk to you about money." And she says, "You must see money as completely dead. It can do nothing for you." Well, that's understandable. If you see that man is spiritual and is filled only with spiritual qualities, money wouldn't be able to do a thing for him. And then she went on for 3 pages to talk about the manhood and the womanhood of God. And that embodied in one individual consciousness, called man, was money. And we all have to keep working to get a clearer sense of our manhood and our womanhood, because we're each the reflection of the Father, Mother, God. And we cannot lack any qualities of either manhood or womanhood. You don't get to be a woman through birth. You don't get to be a man through birth in the right sense of it. You get it through spiritual acceptance. The Bible tells us, owe no man anything but to love one another. That means to love under all circumstances. If someone does something mean to us, do we owe him resentment, which is sending back, resending what he sent us? Or do we owe him love? If a tornado hit our town or our home, do we react with hatred and anger, or do we give out love, knowing that in God's universe all is intact and his universe is the only universe? If we hold on to this, we'll see the law of restitution in operation. If we hold on to mortal mind, we'll see the lack of God we're expressing result in lack in our life. To enjoy the rewards of having a consciousness of love, we must forbid the entrance into our consciousness of anything unlike love, and use the love that is present constantly and consistently. If we want a form of love to keep coming in as income, we want to make sure that mentally love is all that's coming to us, and that is all we're giving out. You can only have what you accept in consciousness. To successfully demonstrate abundance, you need to be very clear that all your thoughts are thoughts of love, and all the thoughts that exist in the atmosphere around you are thoughts of love. And that's a very important point. I had a man call me once who was regional director of a large international company. And he said, "Always, my region has been the leading region in the whole world for this company." And he said, "This quarter, which was then 2 months over, we have done absolutely nothing." And he said, "I can't turn a report like that into my company." And I'd worked with that man from time to time, and I knew that he had a good understanding of supply and business. And I told him that that wasn't the problem. But I said, "Look, we are going through a recession. The mental atmosphere is filled with people saying business is bad and I can't do what I usually do." I says, "Consciously or unconsciously, you've taken that in. Now let's clear your thought and get you convinced that there's nothing but the abundance of love filling your consciousness and surrounding it, and there is no thinking going on except that which is coming from God, and that's all that you can be affected by." And that's the way we work. At the end of the next month, 1 month, his region had done better than it had ever done in any quarter up until then. He removed the thought that there was something in the mental atmosphere that could encroach upon him and limit him. I had a woman call me once who was a big farmer. She had many, many farms and ranches. And she says, suddenly, she says, I don't have a cash flow that's working. She says, I have bills to pay, and I need to buy all the seeds for the spring planting. And she said something which I thought was very interesting. She says, all these bills that I owe, I've already written the checks for. There was the anticipation, the expectation. Now, this was a lady who was a good working Christian Scientist, and she understood supply. But again, here was the whole farm picture. Farms were failing everywhere. And this mental atmosphere was affecting her. And that's what we went to work on, to see that only God's mind was affecting her, and that she couldn't be conscious of anything but prosperity and success everywhere. That afternoon, a man came by to see her who wanted to buy a ranch from her. It was a ranch that she'd had on the market for 5 years and hadn't moved. But when this belief that was encompassing her thought from the outside was removed, then she had all the supplies she needed. Oklahoma has been right in the middle of a depressed area of thought these last years. You all know that. The oil industry hasn't been very kind to you, and farm production has been worse. The reaction by mortals to these two situations has created a mental atmosphere of lack that one needs to separate himself from to successfully demonstrate supply for himself and his church. And you know, this drought that you had last year, and which some people say maybe will be here this year, all that is a drying up of love in the consciousness of the farmers. They've all been complaining so much and hating so much the government and so forth. That's the drought. But if you see that you live in a world of love, and there's nothing but a mind of love manifesting itself where each individual seems to be, a lot of that hatred will get out of the way. And then love can produce that which is right, that we need on the human scene. Negative thinking and reacting does not exist in the real, where one mind alone is thinking. If all the thoughts that you are aware of around you are the thoughts of mind, you're filled with a constant inpouring of love. You then won't be pulled down by the negative mental atmosphere which does not exist in the realm of the one mind. A consciousness filled only with the qualities of love, constantly expressed, can have no belief of need or lack in it. If that belief has been removed, the evidence is removed. And that Christian Science doesn't give us abundance, but by giving us the understanding of abundance, it removes the thought of need or lack from our consciousness. And once that is out of the way, then there's nothing keeping us from seeing the abundance that's always been here for each of God's reflections. I knew a lady once who lived in Chicago, in a very exclusive suburb, and her husband had a failure in his business and declared bankruptcy. And the people in this suburb were very indignant that anybody living near them would do such a thing. They took it out on her, the women did. If she was walking down the street and they saw her, they'd cross to the other side. If they saw her in a supermarket, they'd turn away from her. And she thought, you know, I don't have any money, but I do have love. And I'm going to give that love out under every circumstance. So every time she was met with an indignation, she just kept on pouring love. She didn't react. And by constantly giving out her love, she restored that family to a much greater position than they had ever been in. If love is all, is spirit, and spirit is infinite, where is there something else that exists that could influence us and have effect upon us? How could we be influenced by medicine and doctors and hospitals and all they represent? We need to stay alert to this false attraction. One of the plagues that's hurting our movement right now is that many Christian Scientists, without much argument, turn to medicine for their healings. This cuts that dear one off from the light And when you see that a branch church is really a composite consciousness of all its members, when a little light is lost in the overall consciousness, it hurts the demonstration of that church. I once asked an old-time worker years ago, when I was young and eager, why a certain church in my city was having so much trouble. This was a church that had a number of outstanding teachers and lecturers and practitioners in it. And I could not understand why a church with that many advanced workers could keep having the problems it seemed to have. His reply was very simple. The demonstration of a successful branch church depends upon the demonstration of all its members. And that's so true. That is why when Christian Scientists turn away from the form of healing that they are prescribed to and go to a mortal mind process of healing that's based on the belief that man is immortal and needs to be repaired, they are taking the light away from themselves, their church, and their community. Medical attraction is an imposed belief upon individual consciousness. And when you handle that imposition alone, often the claim that would make one want to turn to medicine clears up. A practitioner that I knew had a woman come to her with a case of cancer. They worked for a while and there was no improvement. And one day the woman said, "Well, I think I'll go to a doctor." And the practitioner said, "Well, go if you may, but of course I can't work for you." And then she told us, she says, "You know, there are doctors and hospitals all over the world, all open 24 hours a day, all with the mental intent to heal. And you're feeling that attraction." And said, "Maybe so," but she was going to go anyway. She left, and after she left, the practitioner cleared her own thought to see that spirit was all, that man was a reflection of spirit and existed inside of spirit, meshed to spirit, and therefore could only be attracted to spirit because there was nothing else. And then she left it. A week later, the woman came back to see her. She said, "The day after I left you, I intended to go to the doctor, and I was busy, and I didn't go. And the second day, I didn't go. And the third day, when I thought of going, I discovered I was healed." Now, what had happened? Somewhere along the line, she had taken in the suggestion that Materia Medica could do something for people. And that thought lodged in her consciousness had grown and grown until it manifested itself in a form that would make her want to go to a doctor. I knew a practitioner once who developed a tumor in her stomach, and it got so big that she was bedridden and she couldn't move. And at that point, her family gathered around her expecting that soon she'd pass on and urged her to go to the hospital. And she said, "Look, I've been spending years developing my spiritual consciousness." She says, "To me, that's very valuable. If I go into a Materia Medica atmosphere, I'm going and let them work on me," she says, "I'm going to lose that consciousness." And she says, "All then I've got left is a material body that they may have healed. But," she says, "I've lost that which is important to me, my spiritual consciousness." She says, "I'm not going to do it." Her stand broke the tumor, and within a half hour, she was completely free. Now, apparently, again, somewhere along the line, she had let the thought register that Materia Medica existed. We need to stay alert to know that there's only one way for healing, and that's the spiritual way that God presented to us, which has lifted us up to a higher way than what mortal mind would present. We must stay alert and let love guide us and listen to spirit. One issue of the New England Medical Journal a few years ago reported that the Peter Bent Brigham Hospital in Boston, which is about a mile from the Mother Church, in 1 week, there were 36 medical mistakes made on patients. 11 died, 5 were permanently impaired, and the rest had to stay in the hospital for a much longer time at a cost to them of more than $1 million. Every once in a while, that journal comes out with something like that. Do you want to be attracted to a system of healing that makes mistakes like that? Over the years in the practice, I've had at least a dozen doctors come to me for healing with problems that Materia Medica couldn't heal. And each has always told me the same thing. Medicine is not an exact science. We'll try one thing. If it works, fine. If not, we'll try another and another until we hit upon something that does. On the other hand, they all acknowledged that Christian Science was an exact science, that if it were applied correctly, it would always work. Those individuals who seemingly haven't received their healings in science, it's only because there is something they aren't doing correctly. Unhealed problems are road signs that one needs to rise higher into spirit and love, to drop more mortality out of thought, to wash out the accumulated reactions of mortal mind, and to become the absolute embodiment of love. Love doesn't fail when applied correctly. The subtle suggestion of trying to heal matter is a strong deterrent. And our job is to awaken to spiritual being. Lose the consciousness of the problem in the allness of love and stay conscious only of the things of spirit. This brings a revealing of our true being. It's always a revealing of our identity to the complete exclusion in thought of our mortal selfhood and of the problem. It's never a healing. It's a revealing. It comes when the problem completely leaves thought. Our only job is to grow from matter to spirit, from hatred to love, from sense to soul. In the process, we stay alert to every form of animal magnetism that would try to pull us down and hold us in a mortal consciousness apart from love. The devil knows that his time is short, and as we get further and further away from him, he'll do his best to try to find other ways to keep us from accomplishing our ascension into spirit. And speaking of the devil, this is a true story. Two little girls were digging a hole in their backyard. And one said to the other, you know, if we keep on digging deep enough, maybe we'll get down to hell and see the devil. And the other little girl said, what's the devil? And the first girl said, oh, it's a great big red thing with horns and a tail, and it makes an awful noise. And the first one said, oh, Mary, that's not a devil. That's a cow. We need to stay alert to the devil in all its forms. All the ones you've heard about for so long, but in recent years there's an ism that is growing stronger all the time that we cannot afford to ignore. Many Christian Science workers consider that this is probably the most dangerous potential to all of our physical and mental freedom, and this is fundamentalism. The fundamentalists interpret the Bible literally, which is exactly the opposite of what Ms. Eddy has taught us to do. The belief attempts to destroy spirituality and imposes a heavy material consciousness on the community. Coupled with this, it comes in the name of God and dupes mortals into thinking it's so wonderful. Actually, it's as destructive as Nazism was because it attempts to impose its will upon others and to insist that only its way is right. Many fundamentalist ministers lead their congregations in hypnotic prayers to curse and destroy whatever and whomever they find opposing their beliefs. They don't like Christian Science because they recognize it's the exact opposite of what they stand for. The result to the unsuspecting Christian Scientists is that one might find the fundamentalist material-mindedness impressed upon him, therefore cutting off his spirituality and love. If one isn't alert to the subtle influences and think fundamentalists stand for good instead of evil, he might become their victims. Many a case has been healed when the curse of fundamentalism has been removed from thought. One of the prayers of the fundamentalist is for God to remove the sinners from the earth. To them, Christian Scientists are sinners. They think we're heathen. They don't consider us a religion, we're a cult. Most of the cases that you've heard about where children have been lost through Christian Science treatment and where the local district attorney has sued are the result of not handling the curse of fundamentalism. Fundamentalists talk about love, but they don't act that way. When Bob Jones University in South Carolina was denied federal aid by the Supreme Court a few years ago because they wouldn't admit blacks, the president of that school got on television and openly cursed the Supreme Court. Is that love?
The New York Times not too long ago published a list of important individuals around the country that the fundamentalist ministers had on their hit list so that they could pray for the destruction, the death of these people. Is that love? Other newspapers and TV newscasters have been helpful in keeping us informed as to how they think and attempt to dominate in government, right from the top, also in school systems, in public affairs, in entertainment, and in religion. Where I live, there was a church not too far from me that 5 years ago had 500 to 600 people in it. Across the street from it was a big fundamentalist Baptist church that had a membership of 8,500. And they were building a college around this church. They had designs on the Christian Science Church across the street. They'd like to include it in their plans. And I heard about this, and I happened to ask a member of that church one day, I said, are you aware of this, and are you all handling this? And he looked at me and said, I hate to think that those nice people are doing something unkind to us. That was 5 years ago. This winter, right in the midst of the season when churches should be really brimming over in Florida, I went to that church one Wednesday evening. There were exactly 12 people in the congregation. If we don't stay alert, they'll take away what we've got. And we can't afford to let that happen. Love is our protection against all this mortal mind mishmash. If there's only love and spirit is infinite, where is there room for a group of mortal minds to exist, to think hate and destruction? If we know mortal mind doesn't exist, that one mind of love is expressing itself everywhere, isn't that making null and void to our experience any suggestion that mortal mind has power and can influence? Mrs. Eddy urged her household to pray daily, O divine love, give me higher, holier, purer motives, more self-abnegation, inspiration, spiritual love. Mrs. Eddy once had a dead baby on her lap. She started reasoning. Life is love. Love is right here. Then life is right here. She kept realizing this and saw it more and more clearly until she'd forgotten all about the baby. She stayed in this absolute sense of love until suddenly she felt the baby move. She looked down, and the baby was not only alive, it was well. Note again, the problem was healed when it completely leaves thought. And this is the true way to heal. Rise into the pure sense of love to the point where there's no admixture of matter and spirit in consciousness. Only a total awareness of the allness of love. There's no mortal mind present at that point thinking about love. It's just love thinking as man. You see the difference? If we stay immortal thinking about love, we are keeping ourselves separated from the one mind. And Mrs. Eddy once wrote, healing will grow more easy and be more immediate as you realize that God is all, is good, and good is love. You must gain love and lose the false sense called love. You must feel the love that never faileth, that perfect sense of divine power that makes healing no longer power, but grace. Then you'll have the love that casts out fear. And when fear is gone, doubt is gone, and your work is done. And then she said, to heal instantaneously, be all love. Notice in that she mentioned the false sense of love. What is that? That's the human love that seems to originate from one individual to another. I feel these wonderful feelings in me and I express them towards somebody else. It's an expression just of mortal feelings, that's all it is. Expresses those feelings accentuates the belief of being immortal. It's usually a love of exclusivity, shutting out other people. And Mrs. Eddy says human love is hate.
Why? This human love imposed upon someone else accentuates his materiality, as well as your own. It shuts him out from realizing his oneness with divine love, clearly. This same emotion that comes forth as human love can also come forth as envy, jealousy, hatred, and other destructive elements. We need to silence the human sense of love and not let it get in the way of the divine love that is present to shine forth through us to bless everybody. It's just like rain falling. We're not originating the rain, we're just getting wet with it. Now, love is here, and if we let love fill our consciousness, we're getting wet, so to speak, with love. But that's all there is to it. The sun shines, no matter what happens, no matter how many clouds try to get in the way. It stays innocent of everything except itself. It just keeps on shining. Love reflected through us is always love, and it never changes. And that's the only love that we really want to keep demonstrating. This love is the essence of church. We need to keep getting a higher and higher concept of church as we progress spiritually. You all know the definition. But we all need to let that definition unfold in our consciousness and give us new unfoldments as to what church is and what it does. Church is God's shepherding power that embraces, protects, and leads the sheep to heaven, to glory. Church reaches forth with the arms of love to embrace each individual, wherever he seems to be in his thinking, and holding him within this love inspires him to return to his original state. This church, still in action, acts as a nesting place where the spiritual idea is cherished and protected by the Father-Mother Presence. Church is the inexhaustible fountain of understanding that pours the true sense of being into each individual consciousness, lifting up the individual by its love power to a higher and higher view of being. Looking at church as proceeding from divine principle, it's the divine law expressed universally, holding each of God's children firmly, insisting upon its all presence to the exclusion of the belief of and about materiality. As we understand the ever-presence and activity of church and see that every idea is included within its structure, we must expect to see our human sense of church encompassing everyone in the community. Remember, Jesus said, "All men unto me," not just some. One of mine likes to keep the thought of church members within the walls of their church, an exclusive little club. I have a friend who calls that spiritual incest. We've got to get to the point where we see that our branch church is the community, and that everybody's already in it, and then welcome them in, first mentally, and then physically. Now to do this, you've got to handle the beliefs of your community, which you have consciously or unconsciously accepted, and which is to some degree materializing your thought and separating you in thought from the peoples of Oklahoma. It's not just enough to deny the existence of these very beliefs. We must remove the thoughts from our consciousness that are expressed in these various beliefs and replace them with the realization in our consciousness that since there's only one mind, only the thoughts of God exist anywhere. Ms. Eddy writes, "The substance, life, intelligence, truth, and love which constitute deity are reflected by his creation. And when we subordinate the false testimonies of the corporeal senses to the facts of science, we shall see this true likeness and reflection everywhere." Some of you may remember a pamphlet that used to be available in the reading rooms that recounted the experience of a woman in the Middle East with a beggar boy. She was working there, and every morning on her way to work, she encountered this little beggar boy who was very friendly. But he was dressed like a beggar boy in tatters, and he was very dirty. And one day as she left him, she thought, "Now this isn't right." And she lifted her thought to see the true sense of man, to see that he was holy and pure and clean and beautiful.
and that there were nothing but good, perfect qualities within him. The next morning when she met this little boy, his face was washed, his hair was combed, he had on a clean white shirt, and he was smiling very happily, and she said, "What happened to you?" And he took his finger and he pointed up at the sky and he said, "I told you. I told you." Now, if we really see that there's only one kind of man and that there are no tags attached to that man, can't we see the evidence of that just as clearly as she did? Back in the days of the hippie generation, there was a story that used to circulate around New York City about two long-haired youths that lived in Greenwich Village. And one day, they were out in the street, and they bumped into the local Catholic priest. And he was on crutches. And they said, "Hello, Father, what happened to you?" And he said, "I fell in the bathtub." And they said they were sorry, and they went on the way. And then one turned to the other and said, "What's a bathtub?" And the other said, "I don't know, I'm not a Catholic." Now, let's not know about Catholics or Jews or Protestants. Let's just get a solid view of God's universe where there's only one kind of man. And let that bring everybody back to their original spiritual state via the Church of Christ Scientist. All these young people going after drugs and sexual freedom and oriental religions and the like are all searching for the truth. They're just going for it in the wrong direction, that's all. Let's let our light shine and open our hearts of love and invite them in by seeing everybody already dwelling in God's universe in the Church of Love.